All right, hey, back on the show, Carter Carls from On Three. That sounds new. What's up, Carter?
Yeah, very new, man. It's been a couple weeks. Really enjoying it at On Three, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and hey, usually we save this towards the end, and we can remind the audience at the end as well. But since you're new to On Three, you guys got any specials right now for our audience? Maybe they want to make the switch to On Three. I know you guys run some really great deals over there. Any deals right now if they want to join Aggie Yale?
If you got $1, you can afford us. $1 for the first 4 months, that'll bring you right before football season. And so, yeah, man, Aggie Yale, that's where you can find us, aggieyale.com. And $1 for 4 months. Come join us.
Hey, Cousin Shane, even he and I can afford $1 a month. Come on, people. So go check them out. Really, really great stuff, Carter. Of course, you cover A&M, so that's, you know, we just wrapped up spring in College Station, so I thought no one better than to have you back on the show. And now that, I mean, again, I think A&M fans knew, you were well aware, but now kind of the world has seen, hey, there was 10 draft picks on this football team last fall, and we had so much success, so it makes sense. But do you think that was kind of, do you think that's eye-opening for the rest of college football, that A&M, after years and years being the program where, I don't want to say talent went to die, but they always signed these great classes and they didn't develop them really. Now they're getting developed. How big of a surprise is it that A&M had 10 NFL draft picks?
Yeah, I remember throughout the draft, my father-in-law, he's a Baylor grad, he kept texting me like, man, another Aggie? Like, what is going on? But yeah, I mean, that had only been done one other time, and that's when the draft was 17 rounds. In 1976, it had literally been 50 years since that had ever happened at A&M. And, you know, Mike Elko did that just in year two. And I went back and looked, just draft picks. Three of his four predecessors, he's already surpassed in terms of draft picks, which is pretty crazy to think about. But you look at it, and there's a lot of reasons why that happened, and a lot of reasons that can point to why it might not be an anomaly. First of all, they've done an incredible job in the transfer portal. Last couple of years, they've gotten two of the best classes. They've got, six or seven guys from the portal went in the draft this past year. And guys that, you know, were either really good when they walked in the building like Nick Scorton, or guys that were absolute nobodies when they walked in the building like Nate Borkercher, and everybody in between. They've developed guys. You look at a guy like Tyler Onyedum, who played in a 3-3-5 defense at Iowa State, comes to A&M where it's 4-2-5, completely different scheme, and he really raises his draft stock and becomes a third-round pick. It's been all different kinds of guys that they've been able to produce in the draft. So it speaks to not just what they've done in the portal, it speaks to their development. It also speaks to their evaluation, because like I've mentioned, there's guys like Nate Borkercher who, before he walked in the building, had like 200 career receiving yards in like 4 or 5 years. So they've done a really good job from that standpoint. And, you know, will they have 10 draft picks every year? Probably not. But I definitely don't think it's one of those things you look at where you're like, yeah, this will never come close to happening again.
So we just wrapped up spring football there in College Station. What do you think is the biggest question mark that Coach Mike Elko and company may have solved during this spring camp?
Yeah, I don't know if it was a huge question mark, but I do think that their offense is going to be in pretty good shape with what they were able to display at wide receiver. You know, they lost Casey Concepcion. They lost Colin Klein. They lost four of their starters up front, Le'Veon Moss, Nate Borkercher, a lot of guys they lost offensively. But I'd say the story of spring practice was what they were able to show at wide receiver. They've brought in Alabama transfer Isaiah Horton. He's a 6'4", 208-pound ex-receiver who can just go up and get it. And you know, I remember asking him about 50-50 balls. He's like, yeah, it's not 50-50 to me. It's like 100-0. For me, but you know, you brought in a guy like that, which is what they were really missing last year. Obviously, bringing back Mario Craver, I think he could be one of the top receivers in the country this year. Ashton Bethel-Roman really came on second half of last season. And then you've got a group of freshmen that, I mean, you know, you talk about those three guys that are kind of the key guys, but then you're like, well, what about this Aaron Gregory guy? He's pretty dang good. He might see the field. What about Madden Williams? Like, he looks pretty good. So it's a deep group. It's a talented group. It is a multiple group where, you know, last year they were all kind of short and fast. Now they've got tall dudes that can go up and get it. So it's well-rounded. And I think if there was any question about, you know, this offense and all the weapons they lost, I think they're still going to be in pretty good shape because their wide receivers are that good.
Yeah, and, you know, I've heard similar things about the receivers. That should be a strength for A&M, and now you've got Coach Wiggins taking over, of course, as offensive coordinator, and, you know, he's instrumental in getting a lot of those guys to College Station. And, you know, have you thought at all about, now that he's kind of your play caller, that, you know, he'll be even more, there more emphasis, so to speak, on getting those guys the football? Not that that wasn't there before, but just, you know, the fact that he comes from a receiver background, now you got all these toys to work with. It's kind of enticing to think of the possibilities, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, when you think about Colin Klein, a little bit more tight end heavy, a little bit more 12 personnel, Holman Wiggins might be throwing out 3, 4, 5 receivers at once. And, you know, they've kind of kept it close to the vest. I remember Ashton Bethel-Roman let it out like, yeah, it looks like the air raid. And then we asked Wiggins about it. He's like, no. Like, I'm a former running back. We want to start with the run. Like, we want to establish that first. But, I mean, this passing attack will be the strength of this team. And I think that, yeah, you're going to have an embarrassment of riches where you just – who do you give the ball to? So many guys can do damage for you. So, yeah, it's not just – who do you get it to, but how many guys you put on the field at once? Because you look at a guy like Aaron Gregory, that guy has to see the field, but he plays behind Isaiah Horton, who's pretty dang good himself. So, yeah, Wiggins is going to have a lot of work cut out for him deciding what that rotation looks like, how they divvy up the reps and whatnot. But, yeah, I would think that this is an offense that really, really can put up numbers through the air.
What do you think the confidence level is in College Station surrounding Marcel Reed specifically? Because to me, he's just such a hard guy to peg where, I mean, it's wild that a guy that won you 11 games, gets you to the playoff, gets so much criticism. But I get it at times, right? I think the LSU game, I thought, this guy might win the Heisman Trophy, you know, and then other times, and probably the best example is South Carolina, where very rough first half, amazing second half, but we've got to get that consistency out of him. I think that's kind of key. Marcel Reed's got to be a lot more consistent if A&M's going to return to the playoff. What do you think the confidence level is in Marcel Reed right now?
Yeah, that's the number one thing. I remember Mike Elko, first press conference of the offseason, was like, consistency, urgency, like taking every rep seriously, like just not making big mistakes. Like, that's the big thing, because when things were going well, they're going really well. The highs were high, the lows were low. And that South Carolina game, like you mentioned, was kind of a microcosm of what Marcel Reed could be at times. I think the confidence level is a cautious optimism. I think it's the way the season ended with Texas and Miami and those both being losses, the offense is struggling in those games. It left a sour taste in the mouth. But at the end of the day, you're right. They were 11-0. He was top five in the Heisman Trophy running going into the last week of the regular season. So, he had to have done a couple things right. And I think that the key for him, and I talked with his quarterbacks coach, Joey Lynch, about this. It's like, just, you don't have to be a superhero every play. Like, you don't have to force it. You've got some really dang good receivers. You can get it to them in the flat. You can take the check down. You can even take the sack. You can take the throw away. You don't need to force it. And I think, you know, we talk about consistency, but turnovers was another thing for him. He had 12 picks last year, one of the highest in the country. He had 9 of those picks against the Power 4 teams, and 8 of them were in the last 6 games. So it kind of, like, got worse as the season went on. Now, some of that was they're down against Texas. They're trying to make plays. He's trying to force it and kind of make things happen at the end of the game. But turnovers were a big thing. I think he had 22 turnover-worthy plays. So 12, like, it may have gotten lucky that was 12. It might have been more, should have been more like 15. So, yeah, he's got to be more consistent and take care of the football better. And I think that's been what they've reminding him is, hey, like, you don't need to make some crazy play. Just throw it to Mario Craver on a slant and let the guy cook. He's absolutely electric. Just do that. You don't need to throw it in a double coverage. You don't need to close your eyes and throw it. And, you know, it, in the spring, to his credit, it seemed like he was taking those steps. You know, we got to watch 4 open practices, not a lot of turnovers, not a lot of bad mistakes or ill-advised throws. Didn't light up the spring game, but it was kind of a weird spring game where he didn't have like 3 of the 4 best receivers on his team. And so he's working with a lot of freshmen and stuff like that. But, yeah, some positive signs, but with the way last season ended, some cautious optimism, I think, as well.
Well, we've highlighted some of the strengths potentially of A&M, and I'm not saying it's going to be a weakness, but where are we at with the offensive line? Returning just one starter at center, and I know they attacked that via the portal, and they also have a lot of very talented, or at least recruiting-wise, linemen that have been on the roster for several years. So it would seem they have a nice mix of talent to work with. But any idea post-spring, the progression of that offensive line?
Yeah, there's 4 guys they got in the portal, and all 4 of them bring SEC starting experience. So you like that. Adam Cushing, if there's any assistant you trust, it's him. He just produced 4 draft picks up front on the offensive line. But I think there's still a lot to work out there. I think if there was 2 guys that you're like, yeah, they're for sure going to start, Mark Nabu at center, he's the incumbent starter there, been a starter there for a couple years. And Wilkin Formby, they brought him in from Alabama. There were questions initially, like, is he going to be a guard? Is he going to be a tackle? Mike Yoko thinks this guy can be an elite right tackle. And so, you know, I know Alabama fans may laugh at that. They may say, yeah, no, we saw him at right tackle last year, and I don't know. But that's how Elko sees it, and he's a little bit more experienced now. And so I think that you can put him in there at right tackle. And the other 3 spots, you know, it's a mix of transfers and second and third year guys who are starting to kind of take that leap, starting to kind of compete for those spots. And I think while it may not be as good of an offensive line as they were last year, I think you could definitely make a case that it's a deeper offensive line. They've got 9 or 10 options now that they can work with, whereas last season, it's probably 7 at most. And there were even times last year, like you put in Coley Fayu at center and against LSU and a disaster happens. So like they tried to put guys in, they tried to have that depth, but it didn't really work all the time. And that's what Elko wants to do. Elko and Cushing, they've made it clear that like there's kind of this philosophy out there that you got to play your 5, you got to have the gel, you got to stick to 5 guys. They're not like that. They've liked playing 7, 8 guys there and having the depth. Now, maybe later in the season when all the chips are down and it's the most important game of the year, maybe you stick to your 5 or 6, but they want to go deeper at that position than most. And I think they've got 9, 10 guys that they can rely on this year, which was definitely not the case last year.
Mm-hmm. And then I've heard some buzz that that we're going to be running a lot more tempo in College Station. You know, could that aid the offensive line that is essentially a work in progress? You know, I think it would help with receivers as well. You know, you catch somebody not prepared and then throw in Marcel Reed, his ability to run the football. I mean, it makes sense. Do you think we'll see more tempo in College Station this fall?
Maybe a little. We've asked Elko about it. He's been a little dodgy about, like, yeah, it just depends on the situation. I do think that it can work. And, like, again, you look at that South Carolina game, You look at the Notre Dame game, when they've been down, when they've had to use tempo, two-minute drill, like they've been pretty good. And I think Marcel, you know, maybe when you're not having to think as much and it's just go, 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 and you can find that rhythm. Like the thing about Marcel that's so funny is like you, depending on when you tune into a game, you have a completely different thought on him. Like you might watch the first quarter and he's missed seven passes in a row. He almost threw three picks and like he threw a screen at a guy's feet and you're like, this is the worst quarterback I've ever seen. But then you watch another part of the game and it's like 11 completions in a row, had an amazing back shoulder throw, two touchdowns, had a run for 30 yards. And you're like, this is the Heisman, give it to him now. And so that's why it's like when you can do tempo, he usually finds more of a rhythm and he usually can be more the second than the first on that. And so, yeah, I think it they'd be wise to use that a little bit more, but will it be a consistent part of the offense? I'm not really sure about that just yet.
We've talked about maybe some answers they've found in spring. What are some maybe the biggest question mark after spring football for A&M?
Yeah, well, I still think offensively, like, hey, you got a new coordinator. You've got seven new starters. Will it gel? Will it look great immediately? Reuben Owens, is he a bona fide, awesome starter? Your running game struggled at times last year. Can you get that going? Like, there's still some questions there. Defensively, I think for Mike Elko's defense these last 2 years, whenever they've played bad teams, they absolutely dominate, and it is like watching a bully just beat up on a young kid. Like, it just – they just dominate when they're playing a bad team. But when they're playing a good a much better offense, that's where obviously like the numbers might even out to where they look better than they are. But they have struggled against the better offenses they faced, and a lot of the reason why – is because it feels like 85% of the game they play really well, and there's that 15% where they give up huge plays. There are misfits in the run, missed tackles, coverage busts, you name it, just big glaring mistakes that will lead to 50-yard plays. You know, I think last year, the Miami game, Albert Regis gets hurt, and Miami's running back runs for a 55-yard gain, and it sets up their, you know, game-winning touchdown. That's the kind of stuff that's happened to them time and again these last couple years. So can they eliminate those big plays that they've given up? You can look at any game they've lost over the last 2 years, and it's been because largely because of those big plays. I think that you're replacing some key guys, right? Cassius Howell, two draft picks at defensive tackle, Torian York, a three-year starter at linebacker, Will Lee, a fourth-round pick. So that's another place where you have some guys to replace some returning production you've lost. And I think that my biggest question defensively, other than the big plays, is defensive line. Like, you're losing a unanimous All-American. You're going to take a step back there. You're losing two third-round picks at defensive tackle. You might take a step back there. So can you find the right guys that can fill those holes enough? Maybe you're better in the secondary and it makes up for that. And I think there's optimism there. But it's similar to the offense in that you're replacing a lot of production. And there's hope that, like, hey, they got Ricky Gibson in the portal. They're bringing back, you know, both of their starting safeties, and they're putting in Tafiq Bayard from Colorado. Dez Ricks could be a really good cornerback for this team. They feel pretty good about their linebackers if Damian Sanford's able to come back. But up front, they've got some questions there they're going to need to answer because of just the sheer talent they lost.
Hey, weird question, but you just made me think of something. Torian York, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe he had more eligibility, but he turned pro. He just went undrafted. He's probably signed. He's a good enough player. I would imagine he's already signed. But and then we suffer an injury in spring at linebacker. I mean, is there any chance? I mean, heck, we got freaking basketball players that are professionals coming back. You know, I mean, I would feel like all we would need was like a Bryan County judge to say, yeah, let's give another year. I mean, has that popped in anybody's head down there?
No, he's already signed his deal with the Broncos. He's headed up to Denver, but
okay.
I guess you never know, man. But I mean, yeah, I actually in the spring, believe it or not, I thought they had a chance to be better at linebacker because they brought in Ray Coney from Tulsa, who I mean was like sixth in the country in tackles last year, was a first team American Conference selection. I think he was an All-American among the like group of five schools. So he was one of the better defenders from that, you know, group of five, you know, group. And then Noah McHale, a true sophomore, played a little bit last year. This guy is a name to remember. Noah McHale is going to be an absolute dude for this team over the next couple of years. And then you had Damian Sanford, a captain, and, you know, obviously he suffered a big injury in the spring game, and you know the timeline is still up in the air. Like they don't know the exact minute and second that he's going to come back, but you know, could he miss a game or two? Who knows? And so that will be the one to watch. But with those three guys, when they're healthy, it could be a better group than it was last year, which says something because. You know, York and those guys last year were pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And you already mentioned Isaiah Horton. We saw him in the spring game look really good. I think if you want to talk best incoming transfers, he's probably at the top of that list. But how about someone we don't pay attention to unless they screw up? Kicker David, hopefully I don't butcher this, Oleno. Any early buzz on him and that he could finally be the kicker that kind of, you know, we don't have to worry about that under Coach Elko?
Mike, I think you might have been better than what they had last year, if I'm being real. Like, it was bad last year. And, yeah, David, I mean, he had was one of the better kickers in the Big Ten each of the last 2 years. He's not a guy that's going to make 60-yarders, but inside 45 yards, he's going to make almost every kick that he attempts. Maybe even inside 50, he'll make every attempt. And, you know, didn't see him a lot this spring. I think he was nursing some things, but played in the spring game, did his job. I think he made a 33-yarder, a 39-yarder. The backup kicker, the walk-on freshman, he made like a 54-yard field goal in the spring game. And I think I tweeted, I'm like, this is like watching a spaceship land in the middle of Kyle Field. Like, what am I watching right now? I have no idea what I'm seeing with my eyes, but no, they are going to be so much better. And, you know, people talk about kicking, how much impact, but they missed, I think, 10 field goals last year and in some pretty critical games, Miami obviously being a big one. And having a kicker can be the difference between one or two wins. And they were fortunate to not be, you know, too screwed over in a lot of their games because of it. But in those last two, it definitely, you know, came to bite them. And yeah, it's going to be, you know, you talk about most improved positions. That might be the one right there.
Hey, I took some heat the other day on this show, which I'm used to. I say a lot of crazy things. But if A&M were to make it back to the playoff, again, I know that's a huge if, but that probably means 10-2 or better. Could you make the case that Coach Elko is a top two coach in the entire SEC with only Kirby, the Clapper, Smart? I think we got to give him the title till further notice. But could you at least make an argument that Coach Elko's top two if A&M returns to the playoff?
I mean, he would be in that conversation. I mean, you. Who are the other guys? DeBoer, Sarkisian.
Some people will say Sarkisian, Kiffin, perhaps, but
yeah.
I don't know. Back to back playoffs would be pretty impressive. Yeah.
I guess it would depend what those guys do as well, because you know Sark. A lot of people think Texas can do big things this year. DeBoer has you know, been kind of up and down relative to what Bama fans want him to be. But, you know, we'll see what he accomplishes. But I think he'd have a case. I mean, and I think that maybe the biggest thing is, like, just think about where the program was when he arrived and think about how little success this program has had. I mean, this was, I think, the second 10-win season since, like, the 90s that A&M had. I mean, and the other only other time was with Johnny Manziel at quarterback. Obviously, it should have been a 10-win win in 2020, but, you know, COVID canceled some games. But you know, if you want to count that, that's like only three good seasons since, you know, I've been alive, right? Or at least since the 90s. And so, yeah, man, like, what he's been able to do, like, everyone's always talked about A&M as a sleeping giant, and certainly they have all the makings of that, but no one's ever been able to bring it out of them until Mike Elko arrived for a very long time. And so he would definitely have that case. I think he's probably got to win a playoff game or two before he can, you know, be putting Sharpie in there. And then obviously it depends what those other three guys do, but he's in that running. And I mean, I remember looking last year at like all these rankings of where he was. And I mean, it was like, man, like, you think if that guy's better than him? Like, I don't know about that. And now he's finally starting to get that recognition, which is cool to see. But yeah, I think he'll be in that conversation for sure if he does that.
All right, Carter. Hey, I've been asking everybody this about their teams. Again, this is way too early. Not going to hold this against you or anything, but if you had to pick today, and again, we're late April here, what would you say early prediction, A&M's final regular season? What's their win loss, you think?
Man, it's tough. I think they take a step back from last year. I don't see 11-0 happening again with the talent they lost. I'm between 8-4 and 9-3 for now. I think that they will be a good team, but they won't be an elite team just because I think they have too many question marks to answer. But I still think the direction of this program under Elko is really strong. And if you look at their recruiting class this year, they're number one and trending really well. So this may be a year I think they take a little bit of a step back, and then, you know, they really take that step forward again, just because it's a historic amount of production that they lost. So if I was betting 8.5, like, I wouldn't be betting it, because I think it's a tough line for A&M. Because like I said, 8-4, 9-3, I could see it going either way. But yeah, I would probably put one of those two records there for sure.
And I can only imagine how many times you've been asked this, because I've been asked maybe two dozen times, why does A&M go back to LSU for the second consecutive year? Has there been any answer to that in College Station?
Yeah, not only that, they're going back to Missouri for a second straight year. And it's because of the permanent opponents and the changing to the 9-game schedule. They had to make certain concessions of, okay, we're going to have teams repeat. We're going to have to change this up, but we're only just going to have to do it this one time, and then it's set in stone. I think if they had to pick their three permanent opponents, Texas, Missouri, LSU, do they want to play at Texas twice in a row, or do they want to play at LSU and Missouri twice in a row? I think you have your answer there. And so they didn't have to play at Texas twice in a row. And it was yeah, but it's kind of crazy. LSU and Missouri two times in a row is that's no fun. And and I'll say, like, we talk about records, it kind of sets up once again. Last year, I remember we looked, said if they beat Notre Dame, they could walk into Death Valley 6-0. I think you look at LSU, if they beat LSU, they could be walking into Alabama 7-0 for A&M. So yeah, like, they can't do any math. 7-0. Yeah. So yeah, very possible that that's the case if they beat LSU once again. So it sets up pretty well first half of the season. Second half, it gets more challenging. You're on the road 3 out of 4 games after that Citadel game. You got at Bama. Texas is tough. So, but yeah, you walk into Bama 7-0, and it could play out a lot like last season.
All right. Well, hey, last thing. You mentioned Texas, so I got to ask you. On a scale of 0 being the least to 1 million being the most, how bad do the Aggies in that great state want to win that game so they can have some bragging rights after the last two tough results here?
Oh, man. Well, they won't tell you that they want to because they don't care about them. Texas doesn't care about A&M. A&M doesn't care about Texas. They don't even think about each other. But, yeah, very, very infinity is the answer. 2 in a row because here's the thing. If you lose this game, you go back to Texas the next year. There are very few A&M coaches that have lost 4 straight games to Texas. So they got to get it done. And you're at Kyle Field again this year. If you can win that game any year, you're probably in the playoff, right? And so that could once again be a game that has all the stakes because it's one thing, you know, in the past, like you look back at the Francione and the Sherman eras, like you're 6-5 at that point. It doesn't matter. But in this era with the playoff and with how good of a program A&M's been, everything has been on the line in these games. A SEC championship berth was on the line in both of them. Playoff seeding was on the line for this past one. We saw what happened. They lose to Texas. They get the 7 seed. Had they been the 6, they would have played Tulane instead of Miami in round 1. So, like, it's one of those deals where it's not just beating your rival, but the implications around the playoff and the seeding and the SEC championship, it's just been massive these last couple of years. So, yeah, got to get it done for sure. And it's going to be tough this year, but, yeah, it'll be a big one.
All right, Carter, thank you so much. Before you go, tell the audience how they can follow you and how they can find all your work over at On3.
Yes, sir. Well, you can find me on Twitter at Carter Carls. AggieL.com is, again, where you can find us. And $1, if you have $1, give us a try. So, yeah, appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.